It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. The Federal National Mortgage Association, a.k.a. Fannie Mae, is the product of the Great Depression, formed when about half of American homeowners were unable to make their mortgage payments and little credit was to be found. In the late 60s, Freddie Mac was added to create the two-headed giant that is now essential to the current system of government-insured home loans. When the mortgage crisis hit, Fannie and Freddie were at risk of going bust, and the government stepped in. Now, 7 years later, the companies are in a conservatorship. Journalist Bethany McLean covers the financial industry for Fortune and CNBC. She co-authored the best-selling book, The Smartest Guys in the Room, about the Enron collapse. And she examines the history, rise, and fall of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in her book, Shaky Ground, the strange Saga of the U.S. Mortgage Giants. And we welcome Bethany McLean to the program. Bethany, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
How are Fannie and Freddie different today than when they were created to innovate the mortgage business at their respective inceptions?
So Fannie Mae was created back in the wake of the Great Depression. And the idea was that if you had this company that would buy up mortgages from the lenders who made them, then that would free up capital for the lenders so they could go make more mortgages, therefore helping the availability of capital for mortgages. And that they did admirably. They had a very strange structure where they were partly a private company, a normal company with shareholders and board of directors and bottom line profit focused, but they also had this public mission to help with affordable housing in our country. And that's the state they were in up until 2008, when in the middle of the financial crisis, they were taken over by the U.S. government, and they were put into a state called conservatorship, in which they are supported by a line of credit from the Treasury and effectively run by a government agency. And the promise at that time was, we were going to fix this. This was supposed to be temporary. We were going to figure out how to structure homeownership in a more sensible way. And instead, here we sit 7 years later and nothing's been done. It's just a fantastic example of government dysfunction.
Well, explain a little bit about the status of this bailout and the government involvement with Fannie and Freddie. The government put $180 billion into Fannie and Freddie and effectively own the organizations as the main shareholders. Why does the government still control Fannie and Freddie?
Well, that's a great question. That's the proverbial $64,000 question. So what happened when the government took them over is they left 20% of the securities outstanding trading on stock exchanges as a normal company would, in part because the government didn't want to put Fannie and Freddie's over $5 trillion of debt on the government balance sheet. So by leaving these securities outstanding, they could avoid doing that. The problem is that they're investors in those securities and they'd like to get some of their money. And while Fannie and Freddie have indeed taken $187 billion from taxpayers, which is a pretty stunning figure, they've actually paid over $240 billion back to the U.S. government. And the government, the administration, instead of allowing any of those profits to go to the shareholders, is actually using the profits to reduce the budget deficit. There was even a proposal recently to use Fannie and Freddie's profits to fund highway infrastructure spending. So they're sort of stealing from one hand to pay the other hand of the government.
Now, maybe unlike other government takeovers and bailouts, was there an exit strategy that was defined when the government decided to come in and enter into this conservatorship?
No, there was not a defined exit strategy, although definitely there was agreement that it would be temporary. When Hank Paulson, who was then the Treasury Secretary, put these two companies into conservatorship, he explicitly said it would be temporary. And if you think about it, Fannie and Freddie took a lot of money from U.S. taxpayers. So did the big banks. So did AIG. So did the auto companies. So why are all the other companies back on their feet and operating normally, and yet these two companies are still being tightly squeezed by the warm embrace of the government?
So, as you mentioned, there are profits coming out of Fannie and Freddie, and the government is taking them. Are Fannie and Freddie building capital so they aren't exposed in the event of another crisis?
Well, that's another fantastic question. And as you might know, in the wake of the crisis, the cry has been capital, capital, more capital, right? If our financial system has more capital, then big financial institutions won't be exposed to losses, and then we won't have another meltdown. Fannie and Freddie collectively are the world's largest financial institution with over $5 trillion of liabilities. And because of the government's decision, they have almost no capital. So were they to have a loss, they would have to take money from taxpayers because they have no cushion to draw on.
The institutions were designed to even out the flow of home loans. So when the government came in to bail them out, it was at the risk of a complete collapse of the way that home loans work in the United States now if they were allowed to have gone under.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating because so few people understand these two companies and understand the role they play in the mortgage market. They're part of the invisible machinery of our lives that make our lives possible, and yet we ignore until it malfunctions. And you're exactly right. Since the crisis, some 80% of U.S. mortgages have gone through Fannie and Freddie. And so if it weren't for these two institutions and the government support in the years after the crisis, we would not have had a mortgage market. So one of Hank Paulson, the then Treasury Secretary, part of his rationale for taking them over was they have to be used to save the economy. They have to be used to support the mortgage market. Private capital has completely deserted the American mortgage market.
Are we now at a point after the disruption of the housing crisis that with Fannie and Freddie being propped up and essentially not quite at the same kind of risk with all that government backing and the conservatorship, where the flow is where it should be?
No, we're not. And that's one of the scary things. Fannie and Freddie have actually gotten bigger since the crisis. They haven't shrunk at all. And that's partly because we've depended on them so much. And here we are 7 years after the crisis, and there's still no sign that private capital really wants to come back to the American mortgage market. If it weren't for Fannie and Freddie's willingness to take the loans that primary lenders make, it's not clear there would be a mortgage market in this country. Even now, 7 years after the financial crisis, the so-called private market is still broken. So that's part of the problem with these institutions. There's a wing of the government that says, kill them, let's get rid of them. But nobody actually wants to pull the plug because it's really not clear what would happen to our economy. And you may think this sounds like a somewhat arcane issue, but it really isn't. It affects every single American. If you have a mortgage or ever think you want a mortgage, it's important because you'd like to be able to get a mortgage. If you own a home, it's important because how we finance homes is part of how we determine their value, and homes are still the largest asset most Americans have. And if you just care about the economy, it's really important. Housing-related activities are some 15% to 20% of our GDP. And so if you have a giant problem in the sector, it could really drag the economy down.
We're talking with Bethany McLean. She's a journalist who has covered the financial industry and the housing crisis for a number of years. She has a book called Shaky Ground, The Strange Saga of the U.S. Mortgage Giants, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So when you talk about how Fannie and Freddie are ingrained into the American style of buying and owning houses, there are things that are unique to this system that you don't necessarily see in other parts of the world. The 30-year mortgage, kind of an invention of this system. Without the current structure of Fannie and Freddie being able to even out this flow and take on that task, would we not be able to see those kind of financial instruments in play when it comes to mortgages?
So we are the only country besides tiny Denmark that has a 30-year fixed rate fully prepayable mortgage, and we're the only country that has a system like Fannie and Freddie. So I don't think that's just a coincidence. Investors, the people who invest in mortgages, don't like credit risk. They don't like the risk that you and I might not pay our mortgages, and they really don't like taking that risk over 30 years over a long period of time. So there's a sense without this backstop of Fannie and Freddie, who provide, they're basically insurance providers. They agree to pay in the event that we don't. We would have a much different mortgage market. Now, in truth, nobody knows because Fannie has been around since 1938. So we don't know what the mortgage market would look like here without Fannie and Freddie. Most analysts think it would be very different. You'd be able to get a 5 or a 10-year floating rate loan. There would be great disparity in mortgage prices based on people's income level and based on where they happen to live, i.e. in a desirable place with a hot real estate market or a less desirable part of the country. And so I think it would be a very different market. But the truth is, no one knows.
You know, you mentioned those floating rate loans, those adjustable rate loans. That's exactly the kind of thing that contributed to the housing crisis in the first place.
Right. Right, it is. So there's this great argument on one side that it was Fannie and Freddie that caused the housing crisis, that it was the presence of the government in the market that inexorably led to standards being lowered and horrible loans being made. There's some truth to that argument in the sense that Fannie and Freddie definitely made the bubble worse than it otherwise would have been, and they too got into this business of guaranteeing risky loans, but by far the worst loans were made by purely private sector lenders who then sold their loans to Wall Street firms, and you can see it in the default rates. The default rates on the loans Fannie and Freddie backed are about a quarter to a third of the loans of comparable private sector loans. So these really horrible innovations that blew up in our face, I'm using innovations loosely, that blew up in our face in 2008, like floating rate mortgages with you know, that could explode, are really an innovation of the purely private sector.
Even though the government is taking out profits from Fannie and Freddie still has a great deal of debt. Who owns most of that debt?
Well, that's another great question. It's a funny thing. In the 1990s, Fannie and Freddie began selling some of the mortgage-backed securities they produced, basically bonds that are backed by the payments from Americans' mortgages, to foreign investors. And so you have this very odd situation where foreign investors are literally financing the most domestic asset possible, right? Home is rooted on our soil. So this thing called American home ownership is actually a global issue. And this foreign ownership has tied the government's hands at some critical times. Hank Paulson, the former Treasury Secretary, tells a great story in the book he wrote about being in Beijing for the Summer Olympics in 2008 and having a Chinese finance minister tell him that the Russians were threatening to sabotage the global financial system by starting to sell their Fannie and Freddie bonds because that would spread chaos through the financial system. And now, even today, some 15% of this debt is held by foreign investors. And if the U.S. government were to make investors unhappy, these investors unhappy about the value of these bonds, it would literally affect the value of treasuries because the two are so closely linked in investors' minds. So the government's hands are really tied. It's a situation of its own making.
What are the dangers of just letting Fannie and Freddie recapitalize, of not taking out those effective dividends from the government and putting it into the Treasury and just letting that build up some capital reserve for Fannie and Freddie? There must be a reason for it other than the fact that it's a great revenue stream.
It sounds really sensible, doesn't it? Well, one part of it is that it is a great revenue stream, right? Once Congress gets its hands on what appears to be free money, until Fannie and Freddie have a problem and need to draw some taxpayers, they're not willing to let go of the free money. I think it's a huge scandal. The other part of the problem is that these companies have always been really controversial. It's this big social question about what the role of the government in our markets should be. And with the spread of this notion that Fannie and Freddie were solely responsible for the financial crisis, they are particularly controversial in Washington. So there's this attitude there, anything but Fannie and Freddie. We can't have them come back, even though nobody knows what to do instead. And people view allowing them to recapitalize as the first step to the institutions coming back to the way they were. So you have this weird sort of alliance almost between this weird support from Republicans who you think would hate the idea of the government confiscating private property and effectively nationalizing an industry, but they so don't want to see Fannie and Freddie come back that they're actually supportive of this.
Bethany McLean is a columnist for Fortune magazine and reports for CNBC and others. Her new book is called Shaky Ground, The Strange Saga of the U.S. Mortgage Giants. We've been talking to her this hour. Bethany, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.